This is Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Coming up, when it comes to police-involved shootings in the United States, it can be hard to get reliable statistics. We talked to a journalist involved in an effort to pin down those numbers. First, we head to Washington for a weekly look at the latest in national politics. The pool of candidates in the 2016 presidential race keeps on growing. Former Virginia Senator Jim Webb, Virginia Governor Jim Gilmore have joined or are about to join the race, and Wisconsin Governor Scott Walker will announce his candidacy on Monday. While Republicans prepare to duke it out among the likely 17 hopefuls, the race between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders is heating up in Iowa and New Hampshire. Here with us now is Harry Enten, senior political writer and analyst for 538. He joins us every week at this time for a look at the country's national politics. Harry, welcome back.
Thanks for having me back.
Well, Harry, it seems like every time we talk, there's a new Republican, maybe two, vying for the 2016 nomination. 14 announced now, I think. Walker on Monday, John Kasich, Ohio governor, expected on the 21st. Jim Gilmore said he's going to announce later this summer. Have we seen anything like this in recent memory?
No, we haven't. We have never seen anything like this going back to the time of the early 70s when nominees have been selected by primaries and caucuses. I think the highest numbers were really in the mid-teens back in the 70s when this process first got underway on the Democratic side, and now we're racing past those numbers. Look, we could hit 20. Who knows who could say that they're going to jump in? I mean, Jim Gilmore's jumping in. Jim Gilmore was the last elected to office in 1997. That opens up a whole slew of people who could jump in. Maybe Rudy Giuliani. No, he's probably not going to jump in. But it's just the idea of people jumping out of the woodwork and they're declaring. It's incredible.
Now, are any of these really, do you think, not that serious about running for president, just getting their name out there? How many are real? How many are just sort of vanity campaigns, do you think, at this point?
I think that a lot of them are vanity campaigns. I mean, Jim Gilmore has no shot at the nomination, if we're being perfectly honest with ourselves. Someone like Donald Trump, obviously, is just interested in getting his name out there. But obviously Scott Walker is a serious candidate. He'll be declaring John Kasich as a serious candidate. So there are serious candidates among them. And if you just look at, you know, the number of recent office holders who are declaring that they're running, that's also at a high for the modern era since primaries and caucuses decide the process. So it's both serious and non-serious candidates. But we'll see going forward. Maybe there's another non-serious candidate we can all laugh at in a few weeks.
Now, Harry, you guys at 538.com, you love your math. I did a little bit, 100% divided by 17 candidates. If you divide up the voters evenly, that's about 5.8%. So to stand out, you just need to get ahead with 7 or 8% of the voters, and you're suddenly potentially a front runner. So as this pool gets bigger, does it shake things up and make a chance that an unexpected candidate could emerge?
Sure. I mean, what will happen is, obviously, we have a process where we start with Iowa, and then we go to New Hampshire. And obviously, Governor Scott Walker needs to do well in Iowa. And in order to win in Iowa, he only may need 20% of the vote, which is easy for him to get. But also keep in mind, that could also, the fact that you have such a low percentage you would need to win, could open the door to someone who otherwise might not be able to. For instance, Rand Paul, whose father got about 21% of the vote in the last Iowa caucus, and that wasn't good enough to win. This year, 21% could be good enough to win. And that would be very damaging to a serious candidate like Walker, who needs to win in Iowa in order to move forward. So it's going to be very interesting to see going forward whether or not one of these candidates who otherwise might not be able to do well can cobble together just a little bit of a base and be able to advance, and maybe more than just advancing, knock somebody else out who might otherwise have won the Iowa caucus.
Let's stay with Governor Walker, planning to announce Monday early evening. Then he's kicking off a tour of early primary states, including, I think, a few days in Iowa. This might be his big media moment, a chance to get some momentum. What does he need to do in this announcement and this whirlwind tour?
Well, I think what he just needs to do is generate press. Remember, Walker sort of jumped onto the national scene in terms of doing well in these national polls and the Iowa polls when he had a very good speech back in January at, you know, one of these many conferences, and it helped jump him and helped raise his name recognition, and more than that, put him in a favorable view in a lot of Republicans' eyes. So he just needs to be able to maintain a media momentum going forward to be able to jump back and forth, you know, jump back into this sort of lead in the national polls. Remember, polls right now don't really matter in terms of predictability, but what they can do is they can help you raise money, and obviously Walker needs to raise a lot of money to be able to compete with Jeb Bush and Marco Rubio, both of whom have been raising a lot of money. And also at the same time, you obviously want to maintain yourself at the front of the polls in order to make these debates, which are very important for keeping name recognition up, because the debates this year, who's getting invited and who's not, is totally dependent on the polling averages. So Walker right now would make the debates, but obviously he wants to be able to maintain sort of that status at the top of the polls, because the last thing any candidate wants to do at this point is not be invited to one of these debates.
Speaking of Marco Rubio, Governor Walker's been talking up a Walker-Rubio ticket with Marco Rubio as his running mate. Rubio has responded he'd be okay with that idea, but put him in alphabetical order. Rubio, Walker. What do you make of that mini flap at this point?
You know, it's just one of those things where I think both recognize that they both have a very good chance of winning the nomination. They're just having a playful banter back and forth. You know, oh, you step aside, and don't worry, I'll make you my VP. You know, they're both going after sort of this conservative vote, while Jeb Bush is going for more of a moderate vote. They're both two newer guys, younger guys, versus Bush is sort of this old guard. So they're going to have this playful banter back and forth, and it'll be fun. But at the end of the day, look, they both want the nomination. That's what they're all about, and both have a very good shot of getting it.
Flipping to the Democrat side, as we talk to Harry Enten from 538.com, our weekly review of national politics. On the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders, Hillary Clinton, some polls showing Bernie Sanders a contender in Iowa and New Hampshire. Does he have a shot at winning those? What would it mean if he did win one or both of those?
Sure. I mean, he has a shot at winning one of those two. Keep in mind, there hasn't been a single poll taken that has him within 5 points in either state. Not a single one. And I think only one poll that had him within 20 in the state of Iowa. So, you know, we're all having fun here, you know, thinking the media, oh, we need a Democratic race to get all excited at. And, you know, Bernie Sanders is this fun, lovable guy. He might get a Ben and Jerry's flavor named after him, being from Vermont. He's this old guy. He's a lovable grandfather. He is not going to win the nomination. If he wins the nomination, then every single thing we know about how these nomination processes are decided, it will just be false. But he could win in one of these early states, because his base of voters are these white liberal voters. And if you look at Iowa and you look at New Hampshire, I don't see very many black voters or Latino voters in either of those states. They're almost all white, and many of them are very, very liberal. So he could win there. And if he does win there, you know, it'll get the Clinton camp a little worried. It might get the media very excited. But then as this campaign moves into states like Florida and states with big urban centers, which have large minority populations and big media markets, Clinton's advantage with non-white voters and her money advantage will simply spend Sanders into the ground, and he'll be done, and he'll be the flavor of the month. But keep in mind, at this point, there hasn't been a single poll with Sanders really all that close to Clinton in either of those two states.
I mentioned Jim Webb of Virginia getting into the race. You wrote a piece on him as a reflection of the changing nature of the Democratic Party and why that leaves him probably out in the cold.
Yeah, so basically, you know, Jim Webb is a moderate Democrat from the state of Virginia who used to be a member of the Reagan administration. And if you remember back in the day, 30, 40 years ago, there were a lot of white, southern, moderate Democrats. But if you go over time and you come close to the modern day, what you see is, as a percentage of the base, white, moderate, slash conservative Democrats now only make up about 25% of the Democratic Party, versus 40 years ago, it was closer to 50%. So that leaves Webb in a very bad position, because if he's only able to compete among those voters, and keep in mind, it's not like he's going to win all of those, it's just not there in the cards for him. He'll make a nice show. He's going to sell a few books, as many of these candidates who are running but really don't have a chance are out there to do. But look, he's going to win a few southern votes. That's pretty much going to be it. And he'll be an interesting personality on the campaign trail, and sort of be of a bygone era where moderate and conservative Democrats were a much larger portion of the base.
Stepping away from the presidential race for a moment, debt crises around the world, big news. Greece, big news. Here in the United States, Puerto Rico right now facing its own debt crisis, the American territory. The U.S. doesn't allow its territories to file for bankruptcy, only states or cities. So Congress having to decide maybe to do something here. What position does that put them in?
Well, you know, Congress just doesn't want to do any more of these bailouts. You remember, you know, the bailouts of the, you know, of all the companies 5-6 years ago, and that made Congress look very, very bad. So they, you know, are going to be very careful. They won't want to be seen as giving bailouts to territories that really shouldn't have been in the position that they are in. But, you know, you said that there wasn't a political presidential angle. I would argue that, in fact, there is one here, because Florida is a state with a lot of Puerto Rican voters, and you see Jeb Bush, You're going to see these Democratic candidates who want to compete in Florida, and Puerto Rico has a growing, Puerto Ricans are making up a growing percentage of the electorate in Florida. So it'll be very interesting to see if you see a sort of split between the presidential candidates who are running, who want to appeal to that base, and members of Congress, who most of whom don't have a lot of Puerto Ricans in their district, saying, you know what, I don't want any part of these bailouts. So it's going to be very interesting going forward. My guess is they'll probably bail them out because there's really no other choice for them to do. But it's going to be very interesting to see how many votes they're able to get for that.
Another issue with presidential candidate implications, Iran negotiations, deadlines keep getting bumped back. Many in Congress, particularly Republicans, want to leave, might want to block whatever comes out of this. Could they? Are they likely to be able to stop it if they don't like it?
It seems unlikely that they would be able to, because remember, what they need here is it's not so much of okaying the deal. It's more of saying, no, I don't want the deal. So they need the majority of the votes, and more than that, a filibuster-proof majority to be able to say, no, we don't want that deal, versus if they, instead of getting 67 votes or 60-plus votes to be able to say, I want that deal, they need 60-plus votes to say, I don't want that deal. And with a lot of Democrats who are going to stay by President Obama's side, it seems very, very unlikely that they'll be able to block any package. But at this point, who knows if there's going to be a package that they're going to be able to block, because the deadline's getting pushed back, 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 and back. By the time any deal is passed, I might be dead. So, you know, at this point, it just doesn't seem like there's much of a deal that's on the horizon. And Dick Durbin from the state of Illinois, senator, says it's 50-50 chance at this point.
All right, so, Harry, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining us. Hope you're still alive by next week for our next conversation.
Well, I hope so, too. I hope to do it again.
That's Harry Enten with 538, joins us each week at this time with the latest in national politics.